Woulda, coulda, shoulda. The importance of words. From Fox News Radio, I'm Dana Perino.
And I'm Chris Steierwalt.
And this is Perino and Steierwalt. I'll tell you what.
I'll not tell you what.
Not what?
Yes.
I'll not,
what?
Not tell you what.
I'll not. Yes, I'll not tell you what,
right.
Madam.
Yep.
So we're
double
done?
Double negatives get you every time. Darn it.
Oh, it's very hard to be president.
No, I get it. It is. The one thing I think that was hard to understand about the walk back 24 hours later was that that's actually a walk back you do 24 minutes later. Like
right.
Do you remember when Megyn Kelly interviewed Jeb Bush way early on in the campaign? And she went to Florida to interview him, and she asked him something. I think it was about immigration.
Yes.
I think it was about immigration. And he said – no, it was about Iraq. And he said it
– oh, yes, yes, yes,
what
yes.
What did he say? He said something wrong, and she asked him again, and he said it wrong again. And then it was only afterwards that this – there was like the whole kerfuffle that was so bad.
And after his brother called him on the phone and was like, bro.
Well, not only that, I think that to me, I was like, wow, was the staff not listening to the interview? Because that was one of those things where as soon as she ended the interview, I would have said, excuse me, sir, before you take your microphone off, did you mean to say what you just said? Did you mean to say that? And if he says yes, I'm like, okay, fine.
Okay,
if
fine. We're going to have a
no,
different kind of campaign.
Says, right. Oh my gosh, did I? No, that's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. And then you fix it right there.
Well, obviously, the crashing insincerity of the president's cleanup is – I have an argument about Trump, which is that the staffers – and by the way, we were at Charlottesville about a year ago, and we ended up with a new chief of staff and a White House reorganization. And I assume that that will be what descends from this too. Not necessarily that Kelly will be the one to go, but essentially whenever his staff forces him, drags him by the lower lip to go and be a normal Republican president, you have to apologize for this. You have to clean this up. You have to. Either he is going to take it out on them to a degree that they are obliged to leave, or they're just going to say, this is crazy and I can't do it. And I watched that – everybody – you know, the phrase hostage video is overused. But I watched that and I thought, let Trump be Trump. Just do it. Stop it. Like, stop trying to make him say things that he doesn't believe. Stop trying – like, that's how he feels about Russia. That's how he feels about Vladimir Putin. That's how he feels about the press. And forcing him to – dishonestly apologize and do that very awkward cleanup doesn't help. And in fact, it just makes it worse.
Yeah, well, but okay. That said, any president is reluctant to say, oh, actually what I meant to say was, okay, because that's embarrassing and hard and whatever. But now one thing I thought was interesting is that Putin may have thought that he won on Monday.
Uh-huh.
And then by Tuesday afternoon, it's like, oh, wait, now we're in a different situation. I don't know. I'm making lemonade.
Putin won. And look, there are a lot of things that are true. Democrats are overreaching. certain media outlets are hysterical. The administration is the actual policies of the United States government do not reflect the things that the president said. All of that is true and all should be noted as mitigating or complicating factors. But of course, Putin won. That was a smashing victory. No Russian ruler.
It's a smashing victory.
It was a smashing victory, and the ghost of every Russian ruler in the past, you know, Pyotr is looking down or up maybe, and saying, "This is what I'm talking about. You finally have the West. You have the most powerful leader in the West, bowing and scraping in front of you. This is what we've been talking about the entire time." And as a matter of domestic propaganda in Russia, can you imagine? It couldn't have been any better. And then he gives him the soccer ball. Woof.
But then, you know what I didn't like about that? He said, now the ball's in your court. I'm like, Okay, that's tennis.
That's tennis, sir.
Right.
Sir. And sir. Point of order, sir. That is tennis. The whole tragedy of it is there was no reason to have that summit.
There was no deliverable.
No.
They shouldn't have called it a summit, even though Member Huntsman was like, it's not a summit. It's just a meeting.
We're just having a meeting.
The president says it's a summit, so.
Well, the president wanted a sequel to the.
Kim Jong-un.
Yep. And it was like, well, we should do this. And now we're going to do this. And I think he also wanted to break up the cloud. The Russia cloud over his administration. And it would be, I'm sure, in his imagining, that it would be a chance for him to show that he's not constrained about Russia and that the United States, that he is a man in full. He is the president in full, and he can go stand toe-to-toe with one of the two other world leaders who are not our equals but who are viable threats. And that he could go and it worked with Xi, but there was no reason to go do that. And the decision to proceed with it. And by the way, did you read the Bloomberg story today that says that Trump told Rosenstein to go ahead?
Yeah.
He told and so to the critics of Rod Rosenstein, who barfed forth a bunch of pieces that were like, this was treasonous, the announcement of these things. How dare you try to undercut the president before he goes abroad? Well, sorry. Sorry. The president telling Rosenstein, according to Bloomberg, yeah, go ahead with this. Rosenstein says, you want to go later or do you want to go before? Because we can go later or we can go now. What's better for you?
I read this this piece in Bloomberg. No, excuse me, in Wall Street Journal. You were just talking about Bloomberg. I read this piece in Wall Street Journal this morning. It was a column by a weekly columnist who said, basically saying how outrageous it was that Mueller did this.
How dare you.
He did it to hurt the president and that he did it right before to hurt the president. And then I read the story about Rosenstein saying, we can do whatever you want. We can go
whatever
before
you want.
Or after.
Whatever's good for the country.
Like, yeah,
whatever
so
you think is
good.
So
there goes that argument. Like, he decided to do it before. And I think that's better. I think the president was right on that. Do it before.
Well, the president was right on do it before if he had not
used it. I thought you know, you could use it as a tool.
Of course. And you saw Chris Wallace do it.
Yeah, I know.
Have you talked to
Chris Wallace since he's been back?
No, but when I walked into the bureau today, I went in and gave Jess Locher, his senior producer, executive producer, whatever the correct title is. Sorry, Jess. I walked in and gave her a big high five because what a honor, what a privilege to get to work in the same bureau, in the same place as that guy, because that's exactly – he was not he was a pestilence to Putin, and he was not disrespectful. He was not – it was not crazy cakes, but man, did he stay right there. Did he stay right in the space? He did not blink. He did not back down. He did not – quaver or cower for a second, and he acted just like a journalist is supposed to act like, and I am so proud to call him a colleague and a friend.
Yeah, and I love Jessica Locher.
That's
a great team they have down there, and Andrea DeVito's great, and Lori Krim, the researcher.
Oh,
do you
yes.
know what's weird about her? Not just weird, but an amazing talent that
she has? She's a vegan marathoner. Yeah, that's weird.
She's vegan?
Yep.
Oh, gosh.
I believe
she's
vegan.
Okay, well, we need to talk about nutrition in a minute because I've had the worst 24 hours. But
I want to quote Jason Bonewald on that count, who said that Dana Perino is the only person in America who could take the Lay's challenge and win.
Oh, I used to do that to my sister. I used to be like, I was like, you think I can't eat just one? And she's like, there's no way you can eat just one. And I'm like, watch this. And I would do it. I have that willpower.
Cut to beatific smile on the face
of
Martin
Luther.
And
then also that's why I'm like uptight. But the thing about Lori Krim, she does the research for Chris Wallace. And the couple times I've had a chance to fill in for him, you're like planning and thinking it through. What are you going to ask, et cetera? Like, oh, maybe we should bring this up, whatever. What I found was amazing about Lori Krim is that you could just be spitballing and say, you know, I saw an article about the thing, and it was somewhere in the, and she's like, the Washington Post piece by Josh Dossie that ran on Thursday?
Yep.
I'm like, yeah. I'm like, how did you read my mind? But she has that ability. She's incredible. And she can find anything.
Can I tell you something else about Lori?
Yeah.
She was the researcher on a soon-to-be best-selling book about American populism called Every Man a King.
Oh, Lori did that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. And that's how you know she's a vegan marathoner?
She is a friend of mine. I'm a huge admirer of hers before she helped me on the book. But we did the research in a – we found a great way to do it, which was we did it in interrogatory fashion. So we started out and it was like, research this. And she would provide all these great notes and the minutes of – the congressional record from William Jennings Bryan's floor speech and all this. It was great. But as I felt the hot breath of Sean Desmond on the back of my neck, mm-hmm. and I needed to finish, mm-hmm. we switched to an interrogatory fashion where I would send her a list of questions and she would answer them.
Mm.
Did this person really say that? Is there any evidence to support this thesis? Is this da 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 da? Boom, 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 boom. She's just amazing. She's also, by the way, just an amazing person.
Yep, I love that whole team. Yep. And of course, you know, it comes from the top, led by Chris Wallace. Indeed. That's,
indeed. Fox News Sunday Love Fest concluded.
Okay, concluded. hey, did you see, it kind of got buried, the Republicans declaring that the war on poverty has been won? Did you
really?
See this?
Really?
Yeah, they did. This
okay.
was their changing tactics.
All right.
And nobody has really talked about this very much yet.
Okay.
I'm going to do so on the 2 o'clock show today with Arthur Brooks. But it's an interesting thing, and you haven't... Okay.
Wait,
you know what yes. I'm talking about?
Well, other things are clicking into frame right now.
Ding, 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 ding. It's like Plinko?
Yep. Yes! I love Plinko.
I do, too.
It's not as good as the Yodeler, but it's
good.
I
wish that the Five could go and do either The Price is Right or Family Feud. Family Feud would be amazing against The View.
You just blew my actual mind.
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
You guys on the Family Feud. Oh, my gosh.
And I don't know why nobody takes us up on this. I've been bringing it up on the show for years. I'm like, you do not understand how hilarious it would be. And I'm telling you, we would win.
Can we have Charlie Hurt fill in that day, too?
Oh, sure. Did you see his tie last night? We were all like, everybody was giving him such a hard time. Because Charlie Hurt filled in on the Five. So we don't star Walt this thing. So... I walk in and I see him and I said, wow, are you going to wear that? Just to kind of psych him out. The other thing that I had done is I told him the night before, I said, he said, what should I know? And I said, well, one thing you really need to make sure you have if it's your first time on the Five is you have to have a great dismount. I said, what do you mean? I said, you have to have an excellent one more thing.
Yeah.
It has to be fantastic. And so you have to stick the landing. And he gets so nervous. He says, I've never done that in my life.
But, well, his wife and children do it for him, so
no,
he's
but
got
he did
that.
He had a good one. It was about a rescue on Mount Hood. And so we're watching this video, and the video's not that great. And he's explaining how meaning that the video is not that great.
Not high quality.
See
right.
it, right.
Right.
And he's talking about how the Chinook helicopter had to back up to the mountain to do this rescue of this guy. And he's going on and on about the blades and how you have to bend down and they're chest high and all this stuff. And then he has a kicker. That the man who had climbed up Mount Hood and then needed rescued had initially climbed the mountain in order to commit suicide and changed
wow.
his mind.
Wow.
So I have to, applause all around for Charlie Hurt because he definitely stuck the landing on one more thing.
Even if he dresses like a thrift store exploder.
Yeah, so then Gutfeld was giving him such a hard time about his tie. And Charlie Hurt tells a story about how apparently years ago, Roger Ailes called him. Years ago.
Oh,
years
I know
ago,
this one.
And
I
told
was,
him, like,
I was go, part of this caper.
And to go into an office and cut the tie off and never wear it again.
I'm not saying that I encourage that outcome, but I will only say at this juncture that I'm relieved in the way that it worked out.
So he tells us this story, and Greg says, well, he was right. And then Charlie says, well, my mother gave me this tie. And Greg said, she sounds like a lovely woman.
Yes, and Family Feud for sure.
Oh, Family Feud. Can you imagine?
And you would actually, you would know things. It would be good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing is about those shows is you get nervous. Or you say inappropriate things. I mean, have you ever seen the Family Feud bloopers?
Yes, I have.
We would be full of that. By the way, yesterday on The Five as well, something exciting happened. Juan Williams went to the All-Star game, and he reported on the All-Star game from there, and he was so excited, and he talked all about the Home Run Derby, which you went to.
I did attend with the Man Children, the Home Run Derby, and and I have a request from the boys for you.
Oh, okay.
Which I want to not forget because, and I will get to it, but I have one son who is a super sporto, and I have another son who is uninterested in sports, not a sports bug at all. And I think part of it, of course, with kids is they are themselves, but they also define each other. And part of it is the way that magnets repulse one another. I think that is true, especially if there's just two of them. They define themselves, but they also define themselves in opposition to one another. And that's healthy and good. I know my brother and I were that way. And I have twin sisters, Genevieve and Janice, who I know that was an element in their formation and creation. All of that being said, number one son is not a sports bug and abjures fandom. Watching him get hype, I mean, just lit up, excited at that home run derby, because it's impossible not to. Bryce Harper, who is a whatever, was shelling these absolute mortar rounds into the upper deck, crushing baseballs. Everybody's on their feet. Everybody's jumping up and down. And to see them both share a moment of sports unity was really cool.
That's
super
neat.
Cool. Yeah.
What is their request of me?
Oh, okay. So the request of you because – and I think they may think that the podcast is more powerful than it is. But they believe that you are a very powerful person, and I believe that your power is your goodness.
Okay, I like so maybe this challenge already.
Maybe it will work. Have you ever seen the movie Field of Dreams?
Yeah.
Okay. The boys have recently watched it, and it pleases both of their sensibilities because it's a sports movie for people who don't have to be a sports bug to love that.
I remember that I believe my mom and dad took us to see that one year on the 4th of July.
It's a special movie.
Yeah.
choking up.
About the boys?
No, about
Kevin Costner?
No, about Archibald Moonlight Graham.
Okay.
But anyway, so the voice that says, if you build it, they will come, is credited in the credits as the voice played by himself. No one has ever answered the question about who the voice really is. It is an enduring mystery. And I told the boys that it would be unlikely that we could solve this, but they have faith in you, and that we should make a request to the universe to try to find out who that person is and really answer the question.
Okay, I'm on it.
Okay.
What if I did it as my one more thing? Because this podcast is powerful, but come on.
I think that's good. I think if you ever do that, I think they would be hugely grateful. And, you know, there are a lot of there are conspiracy theories that abound about who the voice really is. But if anybody within earshot can hear, or if you ever do anything with it, or we ever put it on Twitter, the request from the Man Children is in, who is the voice?
Okay, wait, what's the name of the guy?
The name of what guy?
Well, who they think who it's supposed to be, or who they think it is. The question would be, who is the voice?
Right.
Who is the actual voice? Who said it?
Who said, if you build it, they will come in the movie Field of Dreams?
Okay. Do we know?
No one knows.
Really?
It is an enduring mystery.
This is a thing?
This is an actual thing.
Oh. So if I ask this, are people going to go, we've been trying to solve this for years, idiot?
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm just putting it out. It's a powerful podcast, but I don't know that it has the power.
Okay. Well,
I'm not sure.
We're going to try.
All right. There it is. But tell me about the second potato chip that you ate.
Oh, no. See, here's the thing. It's just one. I have, you know, Erin Landers left. Okay.
I know. We mourn her passing.
We do. But, you know, that's okay. And there's a young lady here named Sydney, and she's been filling in, helping In fact, I'm gonna text you an article, something right now that is part of this, so that you will laugh so hard. It's a picture that I took yesterday. My schedule is a little weird because I don't like to eat before the too much before the 2 o'clock show, but I need to eat a little bit before the 2 o'clock show so I have enough energy. And then at 3 o'clock, I'm starving, but I don't want to eat too much before the 5 o'clock show because I don't want to feel like heavy. You want to feel light on your feet when you're doing a show. And then you're starving by 6. And in the middle of this, there's no time to like go find stuff, even though we have pretty good facilities here now at Fox where you can get good food. But I don't like to ask. I'm like, could you go help me get some food, whatever? But Aaron would just like there was snacks there. Yep. There was just like there was even though you hated the snacks that she got, like they were there.
Just the dinosaur poop. Yeah.
And then so Sydney last week, she went and got a few things that I like. So one of the things I like is pirate booty. Do you ever have that?
Pirate's booty.
Pirate's booty. Well, I don't know what it's called. I just know I like it.
It's puffed corn.
It's puffed corn. Okay. So yesterday was one of the worst nutrition days of my life, and I felt so gross. I didn't feel good this morning. Nothing.
What did you eat?
Okay, so at home, we don't even have that much food there because, you know, we spend a lot of time away on the weekends. We come back to the city on the weekdays, and it's like, well, it's like a food desert at our house, even though you could go and get stuff, but there's, like, not much there. If Peter listens to this, he's going to get irritated because I know he'll say, I said I'll go to the store for you, and what do you want? The thing is, I never know what I want because I don't want anything. Ugh. This is so frustrating. And so...
You know, I just want to point out that you are accelerating towards the moment where they give you one of those feeder tubes like they have in the hospital that Peter's just going to have to set up a rig.
I can't tell you. Like, for example, last Friday night, I get off the ferry where he picks me up, so we're going to go spend the weekend in Bayhead, New Jersey, and... He says, I got a quiche for dinner.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, And then he was kind of offended because not offended, but he was like, well, you know, if you don't tell me what you want, I thought you liked quiche. I'm like, who likes quiche for dinner on a Friday night? Who?
But that actually sounds like...
Would you eat quiche on a Friday night in the summer?
I would as like an appetizer.
Okay.
Like, is there a steak that then comes after it?
No.
It's just a quiche by itself.
So instead, we did go to this Italian restaurant that I'm going to recommend. Now, I'm going to tell you, you know how I feel about food. I don't really love it. I don't like, I mean, I like to eat, of course, but it's like I'm never.
A necessary evil.
I would say
that your view on food is that it is a necessary evil.
Well, or a necessary thing and like whatever. But I'm telling you, there's a place in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. It is called the Coal House Bistro.
C-O-A-L?
C-O-A-L, like coal, like. You know,
like Freedom Fuel, yes.
Yes, Freedom Fuel. Coal House, because they have a coal-fired Coal House pizza. Mm, that's where they do the coal-fired pizza. So yes. They just opened Coal House Bistro.
Okay.
It's Italian food, and I'm going to tell you, I love it. I love every bit of it. I ordered the stuffed mushroom caps and
yes.
as an appetizer for Peter and I to share, and I think that came with 8, and I ate 5 of them.
Whoa.
Yeah. Then I even shared... a salad with him, and I shared, I'm going to get it wrong. Something that had like a little bit of a spicy sauce. Everything at this restaurant is fantastic. Okay.
Oh, good.
So I had a good start to the weekend. So then yesterday.
Good start. Yesterday.
I'm in the food desert that is my house. I'm looking, I'm like, there is a little bit of granola that I could put some almond milk in, and I could have that. And the thing is, it had a ginger flavor. And I remember when I bought it because I thought, oh, this sounds pretty good. Well, it's not. But it's the only thing I have. I'm like, I'll just throw that down and be fine. Okay, that's it. So I get to the office. Now I've had a workout and I'm still kind of hungry. So before I went down to get hair and makeup, I had Pirate's booty.
Pirate's booty,
okay,
yes.
Okay, that's not very good. Then I thought, well, then I'll just get something after the show. Oh, no, because I brought something. Greg told me about the Atkins dark chocolate shakes are actually pretty good.
Yeah,
of sugar. You can just put one of those in your bag. So I took his advice and I brought that and I thought, okay, I'm going to have that at 3 after the show and that'll be good. Well, then I'm getting ready to go to the show. I'm like, oh, I'm so hungry. And sometimes I would ask Aaron to bring me something like a little fruit bar, whatever. There's only thing that is upstairs in the green room. You know the cookies that they have? Have you ever seen the homemade Oreos that they make?
Yeah.
Okay, so I kind of like those. So I have one of those.
They're good.
Then I have a sugar high. Then I leave and I drink this shake and I don't like it because what is in, like, whatever sort of aftertaste or chemical thing, it tastes awful. I can't stand it. So then I'm still hungry, so I ate peanuts, and then I'm like, all I've basically eaten is salt and sugar all day. I then finished the five.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I had five pieces of jicama, which is very good, but there's only so much jicama you can eat. Well, it's in the platter.
Your history's greatest monster.
This is why I wanted to tell you about the worst day. But it gets worse. Okay. I have some jicama. I go upstairs. Now I'm going to go to a dinner with friends.
Okay.
And we're going to Perry Street. Have you been to Perry Street? It's a Jean-Georges restaurant. So it's a fancy fine dining. And I'm thinking, we're not going to eat for probably another hour and a half. I am starving. So I ate a bag of veggie chips, like one of those small like snack bags of veggie chips.
Are you even a person?
Oh, no, Oh, I forgot. Did you see the picture I sent you? That is actually what I ate in between the 3 o'clock and the five. After I didn't like the shake, I found in my bag the snack pack that I got from the Amtrak when I went down to do Fox News
Sunday. Which, by the way, is a good snack mix.
But the only thing I like in it are the roasted sesame sticks and the chili cheese
wasabi
triangles.
Peas.
So, again, I've had more salt and like fake stuff.
Okay.
Okay, we get to the restaurant. I usually don't drink alcohol on the weekdays anymore, but, you know, yesterday called for it. So I say with my friends, I'll have a glass of the red wine. I'm looking at this restaurant menu, and everything is so expensive. The heirloom tomatoes are $22. That's the appetizer, $22. But I knew I would eat it, so I got it. That was actually delicious. And then, because I'm so hungry and I really wanted something, I knew something I would eat. The rest of it's almost all fish, and I don't eat any fish or seafood because I just don't like it. I ordered the fried chicken. The fried chicken comes. It's delicious. I ate like five bites of it and was stuffed. And then I had some corn that was like a side part. It's like a little bit of corn. So I eat that. And then they bring the chef's like, oh, here's his little fancy dessert thing afterwards. He had made homemade Kit Kats.
What?
Yeah. So
what?
I had a half of one of those. And then I went home. And I was like, that was the worst
nutrition day, it's
appalling, and I should be fined for that.
I have all kinds of opprobrium for you that I will deliver, but first, and talk slowly, tell me about a homemade Kit Kat.
Talk slowly?
don't spare no detail. Like, was it a...
Well, that's like Erin Landers, because she's gluten-free. She will ask people to fully describe what an apple pie tastes like.
So was it almost like a phyllo dough? Like how did he construct?
Okay, so the chocolate was a little darker and thicker than your average Kit Kat.
Right.
It was a little. It was probably only half the size of one stick of Kit Kat, and there were three of them on the plate because there were three of us for dinner.
Okay.
But the inside was like, I don't know what he used. Like maybe he scrunched up Rice Krispie treats or something. I don't know.
So like wafer, but did it have a wafer-like consistency?
Yes.
Oh, that sounds so good.
But
with more like
of a little bit of a salty sweet than a Kit Kat.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. So you are, I would say that
was just terrible. I'm just so embarrassed by the whole thing.
And
then today, it didn't even get any better. I had, today I thought I'll start off better. I have an avocado.
Okay.
With some gluten-free chips that Peter had there. I got here. I was starving. And so I brought, I got a pirate's booty, but I got an iced tea downstairs.
Okay.
But because I think maybe because I've eaten not the right thing or not enough or whatever, the caffeine hit me so bad. And then that made me sick and shaky. So I'm a wreck.
So basically, Aaron's departure is going to kill you.
Here's the thing. I've got to decide. I am an adult, and I need to do better, and I need to take care of myself better. So I got to figure this out. I got to figure it out because
you eat like a raccoon at a health spa.
A raccoon at a
health spa in Big Sur. It's a very weird.
It's not really even healthy because I like the chips.
Well, but that's what I mean. It's scavenged and it's irregular and
it's terrible.
But I also want to say this. Any day in which you eat America's national dish, our finest contribution to world cuisine, fried chicken, and if the fried chicken is excellent, that covers a lot of sins.
Let me tell you, that is the best fried chicken I ever had. So I took the rest of it home and put it in the fridge. And Peter had a guy's night kind of thing last night. So he got home real late So this morning I sent him a text and I said, you know, by the way, when you get back from the park with Jasper, there's some chicken in there that could be cut up for his breakfast. And he said,
what?
And he said,
what?
Oh, good, because I brought home steak for him, too.
So you would give cold fried chicken to a dog instead of a person?
Well, I wasn't going to eat it.
But Peter would eat it.
No, probably not.
He would not eat cold fried chicken?
I don't think so.
Revoke his citizenship now.
I mean, I think he would, but would he have eaten it today? Probably not. And also, here's the other thing. Because Peter and I are leaving early tomorrow morning for a weekend. We go to this conference every year. Jasper has to go to his sitters today at 2, so neither of us were going to see
him.
Yeah, that's
so right. he needed extra treatsies.
That was just like therapy. I'm so embarrassed.
There is a long-running debate that you are, I would say, singularly unqualified to answer, but I will just point this out. When it comes to kinds of fried chicken, there are kinds of fried, so for example, the kind of, have you ever had Popeye's fried chicken?
Not for years and years.
But you know it exists. You know it's a thing.
Yeah.
So that, when it's hot and freshly fried, that kind of thickly breaded, and if you make like a cornflake crusted, like there's all kind that has thick crust like that, that is great when it's hot. But I think that the superior kind of chicken is the kind of chicken that what I call picnic chicken, which doesn't have as much breading on it, which would be closer represented by Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Like the Kentucky Fried as much. Mm-mm.
But the next day at room temperature is a miracle, is life-changing. And when I make fried chicken, which is a whole thing, right? That's like a day. And if I'm going to make fried chicken, I prepare in advance. I think about it. It requires step after step after step. Oh, my gosh.
To think about?
Well, you got to think about that. So you could do the yard fryer where you basically take one of those turkey fryers. And by the end of the day, when you're frying chicken that way in the yard and you've got newspaper out and you're throwing chicken out, by the end, you're frying everything. Like, you know, just if the kids slow down, you throw one of them in. You're frying everything in there. That's where you do your novelty fry. You do the like a Snickers bar or whatever. So that's one thing. But the real fried chicken, the actual fried chicken, is cooked in a cast iron skillet, browned to the correct temperature, and then put on a rack in the oven to finish cooking through. Because if you cook it to doneness in the skillet, you will burn it. You will not have the coating that you want. But when I cook fried chicken the real way, the honest to God way, I do want it to kind of taste like my mother's. But I want it to be a little spicier, with more of a black pepper kick. And I also don't want it to be gobbed in batter. I don't want it to be bloppy and chunky. I want the crispness of the fat in the skin. I want it to render out, get a nice honeycomb texture, and be shatteringly crisp so that as it rests and in the refrigerator overnight, I have been known to fry chicken simply for the purpose of eating it the next day, that it was directed for the picnic the next day, not even to eat hot.
Wow. So have you ever tried an air fryer?
I've seen them advertised.
I don't even know what that is. And did you buy an Instapot or whatever that's called?
I do have an Instapot.
Bethany Mandel, she wants to know.
Who, by the way, described us as her favorite, what did she call it?
Calm
political podcast.
Well, I want to hear what she thinks about my calmness about my nutrition.
And I just want to say, I'm outraged. I'm outraged at being called calm. I'm just full of fury. I'm indignant.
What were some of her other categories? Hyperdrive with Ben Shapiro.
Yeah.
Oh, so, hey, by the way, one of our mutual friends, Josh Kroshar, has a new podcast.
I wanted to plug that. Yes, please do.
So he debuted this week. It's called Against the Grain, which is also the
name of his column.
Twice weekly column?
Yep.
Yep. And I listened to the first episode. He interviewed Congressman Ryan Costello of Pennsylvania. It was great.
Yep.
He's doing a great job. That will be a good podcast. Everyone should add that to their list.
I put it. I cleared off a couple on my list.
I did too. Which ones did you clear off?
I'm not saying.
Oh, darn.
It would be unkind. but I cleared a couple off that I just wasn't listening to, and put Josh in because I know it's going to be good because he's a good journalist. He asks good questions. He's a good guy, and I'm very proud that he's my friend too.
Can I get your update on how do the midterms look?
Well, about the same.
So the House is certainly in question for the Republicans, and the Senate looks fairly good for the GOP?
If you made me pick today, I would say Dems take the House, and that verdict is
but
unchanged.
Barely.
Yeah, probably. So I would say that if I were to put the 50-yard marker here, I would probably say is that Dems take House by 5 seats or so. If I was doing where the 50-yard line is right now. Now, if we go out to the 40s and we look at what's between the 40s, this is football. If we look at what's between the 40s, anything from Republicans hold on by the skin of their teeth with a 1 or 2 seat majority to Dems win by 15, 20, that's also possible. So it hasn't really changed. There was a lot of hype about it's a huge wave, like it blah, blah, blah. Well, oh, by the way, one thing everybody should remember about the generic ballot, because of the composition of the Congress and because of things, and also not just gerrymandering. Not just gerrymandering. Not just gerrymandering and not just the composition of the states, right?
Yep.
Because as we've talked about before, states like Wyoming still are going to have Democrats complain about how the decentralization away from urban areas and how it favors Republicans. But Wyoming gets a congressman, right? Like that's just – and Montana gets a congressman. We're not going to have them not have members of Congress, I hope. So there is that skew. But there's also this, which is any given Republican votes at a higher frequency than any given Democrat. And most of that relates to affluence. The richer you are, the wealthier you are, the more likely you are to be a voter. This is just the way it is. Voting propensity is closely correlated to income and educational attainment. And because Republicans as a group are richer than Democrats, tend to be more affluent, they vote at a higher propensity. And as a consequence of all of that, Democrats need that they start with a -3 on the generic ballot in the House, something like that, because of all of those factors. So when you see the Democrats at 7, 8, 9, 10 points in the generic ballot, you can essentially subtract 3 points from that to start with because Republicans are going to overperform that number for all of those reasons that I just described. So that's baked into it. And so, Democrats have consistently in the halftime report average been up 7 points. And that would give them the House. That would be enough. And also, of course, they're raising so much money.
Yeah, what do you think of that? So,
holy smokes.
Actually, if we get to it today on the show when you're on, I was going to ask you about the fundraising numbers. Is it true? Am I right that in almost every close race or competitive race in the House, the Democrats have outraised their Republican opponent?
Yeah, and here's what's very interesting about that. So the Republicans are raising a ton of money from very rich people. Let's also set aside. Did you see the fundraising numbers for Trump's reelection?
Yes, huge, right?
Huge. And from small donors.
And a lot of it's small donor. Right.
Small donors, that demonstrates real grassroots enthusiasm and support. That's a real thing. And any Democrat who thinks that Trump is going to be an easy out in 2020, no matter how many double negatives he uses, should look at those numbers closely. And they should pay attention to that. Trump is not going to be an easy out, at least at this moment, I would say. So leaving that aside, you saw Paul Ryan raised $51 million.
Yes.
He raised $51 million.
That guy is sprinting to the finish. He's not resting in any way.
He raised $51 million for his super PAC. So the Republicans are raising all of this money for super PACs, which means that you can take big checks from billionaires. You can take huge money from very rich people. And the Republicans have this giant war chest. So the Democratic Party itself can't raise ticky-boo. They got nothing. There's the DNC, bless Tom Perez's heart as he tries to rebuild that institution. Democrats, at the heinous reign of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Democrats don't have confidence in the DNC. They don't have the kind of super PAC structure that lends itself to doing what the Republicans did. They have all this energy and they have all of this passion, and it's manifesting itself in hard contributions, direct contributions to campaigns. So they are blowing the doors off their Republican opponents. And guess what? If you're a candidate, what would you rather have? A super PAC that is distant from you and perhaps driven by the motivations and self-interest of consultants? Or would you rather have hard money that you can spend right now the way you want it? And I think the answer is pretty obvious. So you're seeing this year a really interesting and revealing manifestation about how the two parties fund themselves.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you about another thing, which is, did you see that? Well, let me tell you, I am going to be at a conference this weekend. One of the things I've been asked to talk about, or just to facilitate a conversation about, is political blind spots. So things that might be happening out there in the future that you might not be thinking about today because right. you're consumed with news of the day type things.
Right. The inanity.
I would be curious what you think on that. I don't mean to put you on the spot on what one might be, but if you can get back to me by Saturday morning, that'd be great. This is sort of something that you were just talking about.
Okay.
Philip Bump of the Washington Post had a piece this weekend where he said that by 2030, 70% of the population will be mm-hmm. represented by 30% of the Senate.
Yep.
So that means people are moving to big states, big cities like California, Texas, Florida, New York area, maybe Washington, D.C. area, I guess. And that, I guess, that's going to put a lot of pressure on the things that you were just talking about, the frustrations.
Right. And the interior is emptying out. The upper Midwest is emptying out. And Florida is booming. Utah is the fastest growing state.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of children being born?
Oh, that is because Mormons may not drink coffee, but there are some.
It's not because people are moving there.
Right.
Okay.
Mormons may not drink coffee, but there are some earthly indulgences that they take good advantage of, and they're the fastest growing state. Essentially, you look at Ohio, you look at Michigan, you look at those states. You know, they're depopulating. And by the way, so is the far north, New York, Massachusetts, those places, the places that were the two booms, the start of the Industrial Revolution, and then the second phase, the build out, that won the Second World War, that all of that, where I'm from, people are leaving. And we're witnessing a generational shift as baby boomers start to get closer to their reward. They are also moving to Florida, and they're retiring, but also people looking for work. Here's the thing about America. Our ethic says if there is not work here, we don't have to live here. We can go someplace else. It's a big country. We can move to Austin. We don't have to sit in Detroit and be unhappy. We're not European. If you're a Dutchman, you don't have to just sit in the Netherlands and be sorry. You can go wherever you want. And it's a big, we're 7 or 8 countries in one. And when one part of the country is hurting, you can move to another part. And that's a very American thing to do. It's something that our ancestors did. It's something that new immigrants do. And that's America. And then we reshape, we redraw our internal cultural maps. And part of the frustration for Democrats is they are now almost entirely an urban party, but we are a republic, not a democracy. Now, the pressure on that is going to grow. The pressure on the republic is going to grow because as the Democrats embrace the socialist, as Democrats embrace and by the way, did you hear Barack Obama talk against identity politics in South Africa?
Yeah, it was interesting.
I was really impressed.
Totally practice identity politics.
Right. I thought that his message, especially as who is, let's face it, still the de facto leader of his party, that his message at this moment to say, don't do it. don't say that you're not allowed to have an opinion on this subject because you're a man. You're not allowed to have a position on that subject because you're a woman. You can't be interested in this question because you're white or you're black. And he talked about, and by the way, South Africa is living through the hell of it. And I thought that I was quite surprised and rather impressed that Barack Obama, at a moment when his party is trying to eat itself, would say, and he had to choose a venue away from here, right? He couldn't have just gone out and said that. It would have been really inappropriate. But he had the venue at the celebration of Mandela's centenary to say, hey, that's not how we do this. Those aren't the values that America does. And I was impressed. I thought that was great. And I thought that as I watched Democrats move towards the energy in the Democratic Party moving in a dangerous direction as it relates to all this stuff. And if you listen closely, you hear that the wail is growing louder. The screech is getting stronger. Just as Republicans radicalized, Democrats are radicalizing too. And
the middle is exasperated.
Yes. The 60%. Pity the 60% of the country that looks at the – and somebody said – I don't know who it was, but somebody said – and I may have already said it on this podcast. But somebody said super psyched about the election – the upcoming presidential election that pits a white nationalist against a socialist. Yay. But that's what's happening. And that's the thrum that you hear inside the system. And then 60% of the country says, could we not be crazy? Is it possible for us to not be crazy? And the answer comes back from the two parties.
No.
We've lost our way. Yeah, no, we decline.
Well, so if you think of any other political blind spots, let me know.
And this is for what?
A conference.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes, I will.
Okay.
And you don't even have to credit me, but you should credit Bonewald.
Oh, I'll credit you. Do you know, so we didn't, I don't think either of us did the mailbag, but we kind of didn't need to, and we're almost out of time.
Well, it was your turn, but I'm not saying.
Well, look, Aaron Landers leaves and the life falls apart. And there's no cute emojis, there's no cute
You're eating breakfast cereal that tastes like a dirty diaper, and you've got no mailbag. It's just everything is falling apart.
Honestly, and I'm hungry right now. What am I going to do? And the next thing I do is I go to that room where they have the Oreo. I will not eat the Oreo today.
Don't eat the Oreo today.
The Lay's potato chip thing. I would rather starve than eat the.
Well, would you please ask someone to go downstairs for you and get a salad
what,
or something?
Though? Because then
have
it's hard to eat. Because then you got your lipstick on and.
Dana Perino.
I know. I don't eat cheese anymore.
Oh, don't even start.
No,
I can't even.
Feta cheese.
I cannot
feta
even
cheese,
with I you. I cannot even with you. If cheese is, I mean. It's like you
it's
don't want
I
to
don't
be happy.
It's just because I don't want to get my stomach. I'm trying to keep my stomach normal and not, like, you know, I don't want to feel sick.
Dude, it's. I just can't. I can't even
I
with
can't
you.
I can't either. I can't either.
You can't even either.
I mean, I really wish that, you know remember Charles Krauthammer once wrote a column about in the future, we will figure out a way to get our protein in a pill and that we will not eat animals anymore. Do you remember that column?
Yes. Strong disagree.
Well, look, you're not going to live. You won't live that long to be. He's talking way in the future.
Strong disagree. Because in the future, when they come up with this pill, my grandchildren will be there and they will say, I don't know whether you know this, Doc, but steak is delicious. And also, what will happen is in the laboratory where they are coming up with the protein pill, someone will be frying bacon nearby, and the aroma of it will come through, and they will look at each other, and they will say, "We are monsters, and what we are doing here is wrong."
Well, that's true.
Bacon is good.
It is
a happy house. A happy house smells
like
bacon.
Like Greg eats all like he is pure Atkins diet.
Yeah, it's
but I'm like,
it's great.
Where does he find the stuff he eats? I'm like, where are you actually finding all of this meat to eat?
Look around you. The world is a symphony of meat. It's everywhere and delicious.
Like beef jerky?
No, it's not just beef jerky. I'm going through my mind right now thinking of all the places where you could eat delicious meat right now around you. And
there's nothing.
Are you kidding me? And by the way, the salad place in the building yeah. has delicious salad.
I know, but
that contains meat.
But see, the thing is like, when am I going to eat that? Because
we need to call.
Do I eat it now, or do I eat it at 3:30?
No, you eat it now.
Or should I eat at 11:30? I think I should eat at 11:30.
I think we need Aaron Lander's mother, Jenny, to come and have an intervention with you.
She's already. The last time we had this conversation, she sent me a note. She said, it's very simple. Just take some things, like take an apple and two hard-boiled eggs. Guess what? Peter bought apples and hard-boiled eggs. Apples I like. Hard-boiled eggs I sometimes remember to bring. Not always. I like a hard-boiled egg. That's fine. I like them when they're made at home. I don't like to buy them in the fridge.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not. I don't buy.
What's with that? It's like they're cold, but they're slimy or something.
I do not eat a hard-boiled egg prepared by strangers. Well, I guess unless it's in a salad where I do it.
Yeah.
But yes, the people that are walking into a 7-Eleven and purchasing a wet hard-boiled egg out of the dairy case, that's a hard pass.
Okay, wait. I have a great segment producer on the 5, and he says, I asked him about the boys' question. He says, although he says it's unconfirmed, W.P. Kinsella said in a 2014 interview that he was told Ed Harris was the voice.
That is one theory, that it is Ed Harris, who is the husband of the great, it's Holly Hunter, Amy Madigan. Thank you, Bonewald. It is Amy Madigan, and he is the husband of Amy Madigan, who is so great in that movie. But that is not confirmed, and I think we are going to have to track down Kevin Costner eventually.
You know, he is, he's got a great new show on called Yellowstone.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. That's right.
Yellowstone. No, but
that's
God, that would be a great parody.
That would be a great parody, but I also think you should
eat
lunch.
Oh, my God, that should be the follow-up of Idiocracy.
Yellowstone.
You're welcome, Kevin Costner.
Do you have any trivia for me?
Yeah, I do. Hold on. I'm just telling my friend Scott Sanders, who is the segment producer of The 5. Great young man.
Oh,
all right.
Cool.
Question number one. Franklin Roosevelt was elected in 1932 and reelected in 1936, 1940, and 1944, winning the popular vote every time.
Right.
Aside from Roosevelt, two men have won the popular vote / state legislature vote on three separate occasions. Two men have won the popular vote / state legislature vote on three separate occasions. Can you name them?
And this is other than FDR.
Yeah.
So Andrew Jackson.
Yep.
Won the popular vote three times. And we also are here including state legislatures.
Mm-hmm.
Have won it three times. This is very interesting because Andy Jackson's obvious because he was robbed. Henry Clay, bad. People are saying not great things. Who could that be? That is fascinating, Jason. All right, I give. Who?
Well, Grover Cleveland.
Dead. Death emojis right now. Oh, my gosh. Duh. Wow. Ah, that's so great. I love that question.
Okay.
I'm happy to get that half wrong.
Well, that was pretty good. Pretty good. All right, question number two. Which president had the most states added to the Union during his presidency? That's a great question.
That is a really good question.
And some great states that were added.
Some of the best. People are saying some of the best.
Some people.
I am going to say that these states represent the fruits of the Louisiana Purchase. Really? Okay, so we're talking about
north and west.
Well, that is the Louisiana Purchase. That goes all the way to Oregon.
It does?
Yes. Where do you think Lewis and Clark didn't go to Bourbon Street?
That's true.
I'm going to say that it took time after the Louisiana Purchase for those states in the north, in the west and northwest to come in. I am going to say, and I'm going to be wrong, but I am going to say Polk?
Benjamin Harrison.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so quite
and
a while.
And the six states were...
Oh, yeah.
North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, Washington, Idaho, and Wyoming.
Have you ever watched, and I'm not trying to add something to your watch list, but I am. Have you ever watched Ken Burns' series on Lewis and Clark?
No, but I need to download something for my trip.
As a Westerner, you would enjoy it so much.
Mm-hmm.
You would really enjoy it so much.
Yeah, I'm putting that in there right now.
It is
so
good.
I also want to watch The Death of Stalin.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. I don't think it's a girl's movie, but it's so good.
What is that supposed to mean?
It's dark.
Is it violent?
Yep. It's not violent like...
We started watching The Ozarks.
Rough.
That's a little violent.
Rough and tough.
I had to walk away the other day, but...
Did I ever tell you my father, we were visiting a coal mine down in southern West Virginia, and we were having fun. West Virginia is full of great place names. Pie, Red Jacket, War, Paint Creek, Toad, Penile. West Virginia has a lot of great place names. And we were laughing about whatever it was. And the guy points to his secretary, the owner of the mine points to his secretary and says that she's from across the Tug River and lives in Rough and Tough, Kentucky. And now this woman was so stern and full of rectitude that you would never crack a joke with her. But old Bees could not control himself, could not constrain it. And he said, well, tell me, are they rough and tough in Rough and Tough? And this woman looked at him over her glasses, and she said no, and paused, and said, but we do eat our young. And then she turned back and went to typing, and we collapsed in laughter.
That's pretty funny. Well, let's end on that. All right. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com, and don't forget to subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Please leave us a review. This has been Perino and Starwalt, I'll Tell You What, on Fox News Radio.